The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Well, it's a story that we've been talking about an awful lot since last week, because I think what's going on down in Tacoma and what's happening to a school teacher who dared step out of line, according to the agenda in our schools, he's now been threatened with his job because of it. Let's get right to our Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
So it was just over a week ago in the Tacoma News Tribune that Wilson High School history teacher Mike Jenkinish wrote an op-ed piece. The headline, Diversity Education is a Divisive Education. And I read pretty much the entire op-ed on the air because I thought it made a lot of great points backed up by great reasoning. But if you listen to the community response, I've heard from parents, from fellow teachers, and from school board members who think that he should be fired for this. And the teacher in question, Mike Jenkinish, joins us here on Cairo Radio. Sir, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much, Dory.
I'm going to, I wanted to share with one of my listeners. I got a text message from a listener who said that they had you as Dory, I'm a former student of Mr. Jenkinish. I graduated from Wilson High School in 2002. I attended his class my junior year. There are very few teachers who have influenced me to the extent that he has all the way into my college years. I always respected him as an instructor and the importance of the history lessons in his class. So I'm hearing from a bunch of your former students who are telling me that you're not the evil person I've been hearing about on the newscasts the last few days.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the root of this. Why did you write this op-ed piece in the News Tribune?
I wrote it because I had been thinking a lot about this issue, you know, going back to the election and going back to a lot of discussions about President Trump, and plus the piece of legislation that was introduced into the state legislature that would set up a diversity curriculum, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And then just the overall sense of what's been going on in the Tacoma School District with regards to that particular perspective. And so I've been thinking about it a long time, and I decided to give my view about it.
And you're talking about House Bill 1314. It would direct the superintendent's office to develop an ethnic studies curriculum. It would be offered from the 7th through the 12th grade. Okay, so what's wrong with that? What's wrong with having an ethnic studies curriculum?
Well, there's nothing wrong with ethnic studies per se, and I think most instructors probably incorporate those perspectives in their regular teaching already. I think, though, when I read about the legislation and when I went into the and looked at the actual documents, I'm afraid that it would supplant the teaching of a more, you know, a regular U.S. history curriculum. We already are having a lot of things impinge on the curriculum, and particularly at the junior high level, at our middle school level, there's less and less real, consistent teaching of U.S. history.
Well, and the point that you made throughout this article is that there was a time when immigrants would come to this country and they would want to, for, you know, economic reasons and also because they, you know, supposedly left their former home for America because they thought America was better in some ways. And so you made the point that there was a time when immigrants would come to this country and they would, as quickly as possible, try to integrate into our culture, our common American culture. Is that a fair point?
That's right. That is a fair point, yes.
Okay. And do you believe that this ethnic curriculum would further impinge on that?
Yes. I think if you look at the overall trend, is to say that if you want to use the word dominant white culture has, you know, violated the rights of immigrants and violated the rights, particularly of recent immigrants. And there's a sense that we have to apologize for that, or that the culture needs to apologize for that, that we need to, you know, critically think about that. And there's nothing wrong with critical thinking per se, but it's almost like a revolutionary attitude, all right, that we're going to turn everything upside down, and we're going to lose, in my view, we're going to lose any sense of the common American historical heritage that's important, that, so that we can all communicate together and we can all resolve problems together through some kind of common lens.
And what are those commonalities that should be equally appealing to those who have been in this country for generations and new immigrants?
Well, you know, I've talked a lot about this with other people, and I think it all begins and ends with the United States Constitution, all right? Okay, so where do we go when we have disputes? Where do we go to try to discuss issues in detail? Well, it starts with the United States Constitution. It starts with the principles of the Declaration of Independence. And yes, then we can look at all of our shortcomings, historical shortcomings that have taken place over time, and we can ask ourselves, well, how can we make things better? How can we resolve these issues? But it's always within the framework of the United States Constitution. And that's what I'm afraid what's being lost. For example, when we do the flag salute in school, mm-hmm. in my classes, and of course state law does not mandate it, students have the right to opt out. Increasingly, more and more students will not stand for the flag salute.
Right.
And that bothers me. And I ask myself, why is that? Okay? Because there's some kind of assumption is that the country as we know it, or the Constitution or the political structures don't apply to them or don't have meaning to them. And I think that's a problem.
Well, but there are a couple issues that I think are in conflict there, because you say the Constitution is the underlying girder of everything that we are. Well, those who choose not to stand are exercising their First Amendment
yes.
right.
Yes, and I'm not suggesting that they should be required to stand. What I am suggesting is that if they're choosing not to stand, if more and more students are choosing not to stand, which is their right to do, I don't dispute that, but it's kind of like an existential issue. Okay, are we going to be better off somehow? Or in the long run, is that a good sign for society going forward, that more and more people are choosing to opt out of giving that kind of recognition?
Well, this is what I think a lot of people don't realize, because I've talked about a similar curriculum that was in the Seattle Public Schools a few years ago. Uh-huh. And the problem is, it is not about bringing us together, which I know is the stated goal. That's the stated goal. But the reality mm-hmm. of it is that the flag's a symbol of hatred, that a lot of things in our country that have been, you know, bonded us over generations are now to be considered evil. And mm-hmm. I do think that's a real problem. I think that and you quoted Abraham Lincoln rather mm-hmm. liberally in your op-ed piece.
Sure.
In defending you last week, I was quoting Theodore Roosevelt quite a bit.
Sure.
Who
yeah.
you know said that the hyphenization of Americans is the surest pathway to ruin, that we become this, you know, squabbling, warring factions instead of people who galvanize and bond around anything that's unifying.
That's exactly right. Now, that's not to say we don't have our local communities, we don't have our local traditions, we don't have our family traditions, our ethnic traditions, but the schools, what were they called? The common schools. And that's where people went to find that commonality as Americans.
Now, here's what I find particularly troubling, because whether anybody agrees or disagrees with you or me mm-hmm. on this issue, that's totally up to them. But
sure.
I heard the school board president last week say this about you, and this is Karen Viale.
Mm-hmm. Goodness, that I think that the Michael Jankaniches are in a minority in our school district now, and we're going to work hard to make sure that all of our teachers do what we want them to do, and that is teach diversity and honor the diversity and honor the cultures of all of our children. And as long as I sit up here, I have no problem reiterating that and no problem saying that publicly, and will continue to do so.
I find it very troubling. I'll defend the First Amendment right of the student who doesn't want to stand for the flag or for the
yeah.
anthem.
Yeah.
I'll defend your First Amendment right
yeah.
to say something that the government and school board is a government, public schools,
yeah.
a government agency. You can't even have another viewpoint, and they're threatening your job now?
That's right. Here's the irony. Here's the ultimate irony. I and people who think like I do are the diversity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, diversity of thought is not tolerated. Diversity
right.
has grown to mean one thing, but if you dare step out of line ideologically,
right,
then you will just be branded a hateful person.
That's right.
Which
That's
is right. what I mean. I've heard parents. I saw the King 5 story. Parents say their kids don't feel safe in your classroom now because of this.
Yeah, and you know, I suppose that you can't discount the possibility that people say one thing to you to your face and another thing at home, but that is absolute nonsense. That is absolute nonsense. There's not one student has dropped my classes. Not one student since this has happened has said anything to me about it in terms of having a difficulty with the fact that I would say it and so on.
Some of your fellow teachers have said, this is John Prosser who talked to King 5.
Mm-hmm. The author denied that students of color even get marginalized. He denied that discrimination exists in any capacity, which is a pretty blatant trope of white supremacy and racism.
So that's a fellow teacher who says you're a white supremacist?
Right. And by the way, did I write that in my article?
No.
No. No, and I am not a white supremacist. In fact, I don't want to blow my own horn, but I'm going to tell you this, okay? Several years ago, I got an award from a student at a community event. It was a Native American student. And when he called me up to give me the award, he said, I'm picking you to give you the award, this award, because you're the only teacher I've had that has not treated me like a Native American. Okay, you did not make my ethnic identity the key, all right? And that's what I strive for, to treat all the students as students first, as human beings first, and everything else is secondary.
Well, I will tell you, in my 9 years coaching in a public high school, I guarantee if the kids didn't listen to my radio show, they would have no idea about my social or political ideology because I don't bring that into the gym when I'm coaching.
Sure.
But I will say, if I had, and I do think a lot of teachers make their ideology the reason they get into the profession because of the indoctrination possibilities, and it was my goal as a coach to find a common ground that would bring us together, that would elevate us to, you know, what was previously thought to be impossible heights. And you can only do that if you, and I had a very diverse group of kids.
Sure.
You can only do that if you treat everybody exactly the same. And I just, this notion that we have to divide everybody by, you know, fill in the blank hyphen American, it's a very dangerous path that we're on right now.
I agree with you totally.
Okay, so what's going to happen to you? You've had the school board essentially threaten your job.
Well, you know, I am totally confident in the Constitution. As I said before, I have not done anything that violates my contract. I am 100% confident that there is no basis, no grounds for them to take any kind of disciplinary action against me whatsoever. So quite frankly, I'm not worried about it.
What's going to happen when your fellow teachers are going on the news saying you're a white supremacist because you don't support diversity education, and you have the school board members who say they're going to do everything they can to make sure that your type of thinking is eliminated, that you have to follow the dictates of their board? Well, I mean, then what happens?
Well, you know, I cross one bridge at a time. And I'm fully confident. I think would they sit back and calm down and reflect on the matter and talk to the people that they need to talk to, I think they'll come to the same conclusion that these are discussion points. They're healthy discussions. They're healthy debates. And I stimulated that. Fair enough. There's other people who want to have the discussion. And that's the way I'm approaching it. And I think they'll come around to think of it that way as well.
Was it your intent to create a firestorm? Because you had to know that was going to be the end result of this.
Well, you know, people have said that to me, and did I know that people would disagree, that it would be discomforting? Yes. Did I think, really, that they would act in such a visceral, immediate, condemning way? I'm going to honestly say I was caught a little bit off guard by that. I thought that their level of intelligence and professionalism would see what I was trying to accomplish, and there would be discussion, there would be debate, there would be disagreement. But quite frankly, I don't think I did anticipate the level of response that they've shown.
I got to ask, how long have you been in the public schools?
45 years.
And you did not know that the thought that strays from the liberal dogma would be not tolerated?
That's not what I'm saying. I am saying that I knew that straying from the liberal dogma would be discomforting and cause some kind of reaction. What I'm saying is I didn't believe that there would be so the reaction would be so, how should I put it, so unintelligent. Okay? And at the level that it was.
Got it. All right. Yeah. I enjoyed talking with you about this. I appreciate you coming on with me.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. That's Mike Jenkins. He's a history teacher down in the Tacoma School District. His piece, Diversity Education is Divisive. And you just heard in depth why he thinks that. I would love to hear what you think about this. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Let me know what you think about all of this. And I'm getting things on both sides here. From the 206, we used to call it a melting pot. Now we emphasize our division instead of our unity. I'm a fan of what he's saying. Also from the 206, good job putting a racist on the air. I just didn't hear that. I didn't hear that at all in the conversation. But like I said, I'm getting tons of reaction on both sides of this. So let me know what you think, what you just heard. 98973, the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the news for you, and then we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio is coming up next. The surf sound that this guitar epitomizes, Dick Dale. He died over the weekend. That's pretty cool, though. If you have an entire genre of music named after your unique sound. So he had a bunch of... And what movie was this in? Was this Pulp Fiction that used this?
It was indeed.
I think, yeah.
Miserloo, right?
Miserloo, yeah. So Dick Dale, he was in his 80s, passed away over the weekend, but the surf sound, does it live on? I don't know if anybody's still doing stuff like this. That was a big deal back in the early 60s, though. Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Doreen Monson's Awesome Audio, Clips of the Day.
And our Awesome Audio is brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash. At number three, after that horrible shooting at the mosques in New Zealand, 50 people dead, and Chelsea Clinton sent out a tweet that said that our anti-Semitic congresswoman, Ilhan Omar, Chelsea Clinton, in response, when someone said, you know, that we've got to stop the anti-Islamic speech, Chelsea Clinton said, I also think we have to call out anti-Semitic language and tropes on all sides, particularly in our elected officials and particularly now. And Chelsea Clinton's absolutely right about that, that, you know, there's a lot of anti-Christian talk that's freely tolerated. You know, people talk how weird Mike Pence is because he's conservative Christian. Anti-Muslim? Yes, undoubtedly. Anti-Semitic? Yes, as embraced by members of our Congress. So anyway, Chelsea Clinton got confronted. They had a vigil for the 50 lives lost in that New Zealand shooting, and a student at NYU came up to the very pregnant Chelsea Clinton and just started blasting her for saying, but we also need to call out anti-Semitic speech.
number three.
After all that you have done and all this on the media, I'm so sorry.
Okay, so this student says, after all you've done, you helped cause this. And Chelsea Clinton says, I'm sorry you feel this way. Which is a good response. Not I'm sorry, because she has nothing to apologize for saying that we should also call out anti-Semitic speech. But, man, this student and her comrades, they were relentless on Chelsea.
Well, certainly, it's never my intention. I do believe words matter. I believe you have to carry them. We do matter. And this right here is the result of a massacre stoked by people like you and the words that you have put out into the world. And I want you to know that, and I want you to feel that deep inside. 49 people died because of the rhetoric that you put out there.
And then they do that stupid thing where the supporters of this woman who's screaming at Chelsea Clinton, they all start snapping their fingers. You know, like they're a bunch of beatniks.
I'm sorry you feel that way mean?
I mean, she's sorry that the person feels that way. That Chelsea Clinton can't call out anti-Semitic speech. Yeah, we should call out anti-Islamic and anti-Semitic and anti-Christian speech. But, geez, we have members of Congress who are known anti-Semites. And being anti-Christian, you can't be in Hollywood without being anti-Christian these days. Okay, at number two, there was a gator bust. A guy who, he was arrested with drugs, guns, and an alligator. And listen to his hilarious name.
Number two.
Police make a startling discovery during a drug raid. An alligator. Vice officers were serving a search warrant in the area of East 161st and Waterloo when they found this 3.5-foot gator in the home. Police arrested Charlie Brown on drug and weapons charges. The gator was taken to the city kennel.
Charlie Brown, what a blockhead. And at number one, I know that you saw this weekend, Sean. Nicole, you're very excited about this one. So a guy is paragliding down in Australia.
Yes.
And then his paraglider lands.
Right. So you see the landing, you kind of hear the wind because there's video and audio of this. And so you kind of hear everything. And then all of a sudden he sees a kangaroo. And so at first it's kind of, you know, the excitement of paragliding plus the excitement of the kangaroo. He's like, oh, that's cute. And then it goes bad.
Then the kangaroo starts punching the dude.
Number one.
Come on.
What's up, Skip? Hey! Go away!
Ah! Kangaroos.
I like how fast it turns. He initially greets the kangaroo.
What's up, Skip?
What's up, Skip? And then the kangaroo starts punching him.
What's up, Skip? Hey, go away.
Oh, man. That's what happens when kangaroos go wild. Those are our favorite sound bites of the day.
Those are Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day on 97.3 Cairo FM.
Okay, coming up next, today's sign, the end is near. Can you imagine visiting your parents' gravesite and all of a sudden you start sinking into that grave? It's part of today's sign next. Hey! Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Thanks to Brock Heward from 710 ESPN for coming by. Also appreciate all the exclusive tips you gave us that allowed us to bring you more stories today that you won't hear anyplace else. And we still have more to do, including today's edition of
Today's Sign That the End Is Near.
Today's sign, the world is soon coming to an end. Man, I tell you, that Beto O'Rourke, late last week, he was just the media sensation. CNN anchors were swooning. They had tickles going down their legs. And Beto O'Rourke, he capitalized on it. He made over $6 million fundraising in one day after his announcement. But I tell you what. You want an example of how corrupt the media is? The so-called mainstream media? Reuters, which is considered a fairly mainstream news outlet. Reuters admitted this weekend that they had information that would have been very damaging to Beto O'Rourke in his Senate race against Ted Cruz. And it was a very close race that he almost pulled off an upset. And Reuters said they got this info, but they promised they would withhold it until after the election because they didn't want to hurt the Democrat candidate. Can you imagine a mainstream news organization sitting on and withholding a story that would hurt a Republican candidate in a close Senate race? It would never happen. But the media is Democrat. And even the so-called objective journalists, the vast majority are Democrat. And the explosive information that Reuters withheld, they had the information that Beto O'Rourke was in a hacking group, a computer hacking group called Cult of the Dead Cow, which was considered one of the oldest and most influential computer hacking groups in U.S. history. And according to Reuters, the information was withheld because of reluctance to compromise his political viability. And when did they release this, by the way? Friday afternoon, after most people had gone home for the day and they were hoping that it would just fade away over the weekend. But it's another example of how the media simply cannot be trusted. The media is rather extremist in its left-wing tilt. And by the way, one of the things that came out that Beto O'Rourke, his pseudonym under this hacking group was Psychedelic Warlord. And one of the things he wrote was a piece of experimental writing. Here's an excerpt of the poem. I need a butt shine right now. You are holy, O sacred cow. I thirst for you. Provide milk. Buff my, I can't even say that next door. Love the cow. Good fortune for those that do. Love me. Breathe my feet. The cow has risen. Wax my ass, scrub my, I can't say the word, the cow has risen. Wow. Now, the excuse is, well, he was just 16 years old when he wrote that. Hey, Nancy Pelosi, what do you have to say about 16-year-olds and voting?
I myself, personally, I'm not speaking for my caucus. I myself have always been for lowering the voting age to 16.
Yes. Let's get the wax my ass, love the cow, I thirst for you, provide milk, Beto O'Rourke. Let's get him the vote, for crying out loud. Up next in today's sign, I sent this out on Twitter on Friday. There's a new device that lets men breastfeed. It's invented by a company called the Dentsu Group. And what they've invented is it looks like a bra. A man can put it on, but where the bra cups are, you can fill that with either milk or formula and then let your baby suckle on that. So it's being hailed as a new device that lets men breastfeed. And I sent out a picture of this, and I said, a new device that lets men breastfeed? That's awesome! Of course, we had a similar device when I was a young father. It was called a bottle. Morons. Why does it matter to the baby if you're holding it up against your chest and suckling on a bottle or suckling on something that looks like a breast? The kid doesn't care. Kid's not any closer to you because of this stupid device. Allows men to breastfeed. The thing, We think we're so precious. Our generation, we come up with ideas that have never been done before. Yeah, they've had bottles for a long, long time. But if we scam people into it looks like a bra and say it's the first time men can breastfeed, then we can continue being the most precious, important generation ever. Yeah. And then finally, in today's sign, do we by any chance have any grave music? Grave music. Do we ever?
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down.
At the St. Charles Resurrection Cemetery in Farmingdale, New York, a woman was visiting her parents' Long Island burial plot. It's the Cullen family. And when she walked up to the headstone, she sank hip deep into their grave. Her lawsuit claims, and what was a real-life horror show, Joanne Cullen bent down to fix a bow on a wreath by the headstone when a sinkhole formed and began to swallow her up. According to her lawsuit, it caused her to fall forward, smash her head on the tombstone, cracking a tooth. She tried to bounce back and started sinking into the ground and grabbed the sides of the tombstone right next to the ground that was engulfing her. And she says to make it even more creepy, it happened right at dusk. She cried out for help, but nobody in the cemetery could hear her. She said in the lawsuit, getting sucked into your parents' grave when you go to visit them on a cool December afternoon with the sun going down, it's terrifying and traumatizing. She's suing for $5 million. But she did get out. Brent couldn't hold her down.
Well, meet me, mother.
That would be creepy.
Meet me down the river.
And all of that is today's sign, the end is near.
When I check in, my
lord, I gotta get out of here.
Ain't no grave.
I simply said everything I have to say for today. I'll go home and think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's show. Kathy, Mike, and Todd are coming up next. Now we'll see you back here tomorrow.
There ain't no grave.
I know.
Can hold my body down.
I regret my actions. I regret offending my coworkers. I pledge to bring my best spirit of honesty, empathy, respect, and open-mindedness, is that even a word? Into the workplace. In this way, I can truly be a hero. Signed, Daffy Duck.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.